Well, I want to begin today with a rather sobering question. And that is, that the question I'm looking for? I think that's not the right one. You might want to look for the one that says experiencing divine protection. But I'll tell you the question anyway. Or I'll ask you the question. Some technical difficulty, they'll work it out in a minute. Do you ever wonder why people die when they do? Do you ever wonder why people die when they do? I think we all wonder that. I mean, we can understand when someone is well up in years and their time is gone and they're failing physically and you think, well, they've lived a good life. It's understandable. But then there are things that happen that kind of take us by surprise. I heard this past week about a pastor friend in Michigan who died last Monday from COVID. He was the pastor to the senior saints at Byron Center Bible Church in Michigan. His name was Ken McGee, and he went rather quickly. He had some underlying conditions, so it's not surprising. I know of another friend back in Michigan, in Traverse City, who got COVID several months ago and was in the hospital for weeks and is still slowly recovering. And I know of others who have had very moderate or mild cases of this unpleasant disease, and they're fine. But do you ever maybe wonder, why doesn't God just heal everyone and not let any of them get sick or die? I mean, I'm sure we've all thought those kinds of things. Why do we have to deal with that? Why does he intervene in miraculous ways sometimes, and other times people die in unexpected or unpleasant ways? Why does he preserve some people and let others die? That probably is a heavy question that we may have to deal with. We know that Scripture says it's appointed unto a man once to die, and after that the judgment. And we realize that we do have some answers to these difficult questions because we live in a fallen world. We talked about that this morning in Sunday school. And the problem of sin affects the world and affects our bodies and it affects everything around us and it makes life challenging. And it seems that most people do not experience divine intervention. Now, there may have been an occasion or two where you have looked back over your life and you have seen that God has intervened in some particular way and preserved you in an unexpected way. But most people don't experience the kind of divine intervention that we see in our text today, but Daniel is one of those people, and we will see that as we consider the text. We see the effects of political decisions can be disturbing. The last time we had looked at the legislation that had gone through and that had put Daniel in a very precarious position, and that edict or law, decree was put into place, and the king was unable to find a way around it. So we read in verse 16 of Daniel chapter 6, so the king gave the command, that is to follow through with the provisions of that decree that said that anyone that called upon or made a request of any other god other than the king would be cast into the den of lions. And so it says, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords. the ones who were putting pressure on bringing this to pass in the first place, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. In other words, there was nothing more that could be done. He was thrown into the pit, as it were. Well, some people are directly affected in a negative way by the decisions, the political statements, the political policies that happen around us. And the reality is that political decisions by nature affect people's lives. That's the whole thing about politics. It's policy. It's putting things in place, making decisions that affect people. And sometimes we like it, and sometimes we don't. And sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not. This was one of those that was not. And so people may live or die due to the choices that others make. And Daniel was essentially sentenced to death by this decree because it would affect his life and his lifestyle and his relationship with God. And this was, for him, it was an intentional action to destroy him. It was rather clear that that was what was the case. These other leaders looked for a means by which they could do Daniel in. And the king's attempts to rescue him did not prove successful. So this provided an opportunity. Have you thought about this? It provided an opportunity for God to intervene. It was an opportunity to show that the king was limited. He couldn't pull it off, but God could. God is not limited. And he is able to intervene as necessary. Does he still work in similar ways today? Well, he certainly can, and I'm pretty sure he does in ways that we may not even see. Darius' parting words here are significant. He said, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." The idea is that Darius had tried to save Daniel but had failed, and now Yahweh must save him. And Darius is realizing that he couldn't do it, but now there's an opportunity for his God to. We don't know if Darius was aware of the deliverance of Daniel's three friends previously under Nebuchadnezzar. That would have been quite some number of years before. But he may or may not have heard about it, but he at least recognized something of Daniel's relationship to his God here. And so we see here that God did preserve his servant from difficulty. Well, did he preserve him from difficulty, or did he preserve him from the results of that difficulty? He brought him through it, but he didn't keep him from it, which is probably not what we want to hear. If you think about it, our inclination is to say, "Lord, keep us from having to go through any difficulties, because we want life to be smooth and pleasant and wonderful every day, all the time. That's what we want. Thank you, Lord." And the Lord says, well, but you don't learn anything that way. You don't experience anything of what I can do if everything is just wonderful all the time. And so, even for Daniel, this was the case. Even for the Apostle Paul, even for the other apostles, even for Jesus, interestingly, it wasn't always wonderful. There were some difficult things to go with. And we know of Christ that he learned obedience through his death. So it's really the normal way that God deals with things. He doesn't preserve us from going through difficult times. He preserves us through those difficult times, usually. But all of this made an impression on Darius. He saw Daniel's personal piety, his faithfulness to God, and it gave him the impression that Daniel's God would come through and rescue Daniel in this dire situation. And it was also clear that even though Daniel was absolutely blameless, he was thrown into the den of lions and suffered simply because of the jealousy of others and because of his faithfulness to God. Now, I don't really have to say this, but you know, politics can be very messy. And it can be rather unpleasant for many. And we see this today in many bad policies that are in place. And all I have to do is mention one word, abortion. That's a terrible decision that was made that has killed millions of children. That is unbelievable. But here is another example of politics gone wrong. The lion's den is a particular, or rather peculiar, means of punishment to us. I don't know that I would have thought that up. I think let's get a bunch of cats together and throw people to them and see what happens. Not just any cats. Really hungry, really big cats. But the lion's den appears to have been a large pit in the ground with an opening above and sealed by a large stone, probably to keep people from falling into it. And such pits were commonly used as cisterns to store water or maybe even to serve as prisons, but it could be adapted for other uses, and that's what this apparently was. Daniel is referenced as having to be lifted out of it. Others, when they were thrown into it, fell down toward its bottom, so it seems to be that there would have been an opening up the top somehow, and then this open area underneath. It may have also had some kind of other drainage area so that it wouldn't just fill up with water. Otherwise, it would have been a problem for the cats that were in it. And then it tells us that the king and the nobles sealed the stone, or at least it specifically says the king sealed it with his seal and with the seal of the others. Whether he was actually using theirs or theirs, they did it themselves, is not delineated. But the point was it was sealed so that no one could tamper with it and release Daniel. Kind of reminds us of the sealing of the tomb of Jesus to assure that there was no tampering. But I have to think that the lion's den idea is rather intimidating. I mean, it's right up there with being thrown in the fiery furnace. It's rather unpleasant. It was intended to be intimidating. That's the whole idea. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The kind of unpleasantness that would be associated with this. I thought I had cat problems. I mean, this is like really, really a problem. And here Daniel is. He's well up in years. If these people would have just waited a bit, maybe Daniel would have passed off the scene and they wouldn't be threatened by him anymore. But they were threatened by him, and they were threatened by him enough that they had to come up with some way to get rid of him. And why was that? Because he was faithful. He was trustworthy. He believed in God. He was committed to a power, authority that was above himself, and that was intolerable. Kind of reminds you of today. Anyone who is a Christian who holds to a belief in a higher power, that is a higher power over any other powers, is seen as a threat and a problem. And we know people can be envious or jealous and vindictive in many ways, and that's what this was was behind this whole situation. So, continuing on, looking at verses 18 and 19. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him. Also his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. Some people are indirectly affected with disturbing thoughts, as in the case of the king himself. He was greatly troubled by this circumstance. He did not want to lose this person who had been serving him in an important capacity, one of three overseeing the other satraps around the country. He could have prevented this tragedy. He did, if he had just made the right decision, if he had thought it through, if he had given it some more attention. But now he's suffering on two fronts. He didn't want to lose Daniel as his trusted leader, and he knew he was partly to blame for the problem. He could have done something differently. And I'm sure that we've all had those occasions where we've made some decision or have had some action that we look back on and say, oh, that was really a bad thing to do, and now you're suffering the consequences. Well, that's where he was. And he was disturbed enough that he lost a night's sleep over it, so obviously it was a big concern to the king. And there are probably things that we lose sleep over, and not the least of which may be some political decisions that are made or have been made or are intended to be made that we have to deal with. But again, you might want to think, well, maybe there's an opportunity in some of these bad things for God to act in ways that we hadn't thought about. So I would suggest we at least allow that as a possibility. Then there was a previous king, you remember, Nebuchadnezzar, who had no compassion for Daniel's friends when they were in a similar bind. At least this king was concerned about Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar wasn't. He was angry with the friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But Darius had a night without food, without entertainment, and without sleep. Now, normally, when we think about fasting, we associate it often with prayer. At least that was the norm for the Israelites, and often still is today with many. Darius may have prayed too. We don't have any indication that he did or didn't. But the point of all of this description is to say he was extremely anxious over the welfare of Daniel. He was concerned about it. And it was all of this was due to envy and hatred for Daniel on the part of those other leaders. And it was because of Daniel's faithfulness, maybe because of his heritage, because he was a foreigner, he was a Jew that was now in a place where he was being considered for being the second in command, and these guys didn't want any part of that. So it put Daniel in a very difficult place because of his faithfulness. But this situation gave opportunity to show that Daniel's God was bigger than any other god or any other power or any other king anywhere. And that is the thing that is noted here. But Darius, after his fitful night of lack of sleep, he was eager to find out if Daniel had survived. He was very concerned. He was considering the possibility that maybe Daniel had survived. He was entertaining that. That's why he came to check it out. He was thinking that, and while he had even said it, may your God preserve you. He was considering that. But it does cause me to wonder, in that night of his lack of sleep and lack of food and entertainment, what was he thinking about? What thoughts went through his head? Was it Daniel's fate? Was it those who had put this thing in place? Was it his own foolishness? Was it How big is Daniel's God? Is he big enough to handle this? Was he trying to sort through all of that? I mean, I just happened to think if I were in that situation and you're going through a whole night, there are a lot of thoughts that are going to be running through your head, and all of this is weighing on him. And if he was thinking, if Daniel's God is this big that he can preserve him, what does that mean for him and his future? If God is really this big, overall, what's going to happen to him? Don't you wonder, why did God allow Daniel to endure this? Just so that he could show himself to be the ultimate? I mean, he had all of these things there. So when things happen to us, we've got to think, well, God is bigger. He can handle things, and he may be orchestrating things that we may not have even thought of, as he was doing here. We are disturbed about a lot of different things that happen, and we wonder, why is God permitting this? And Daniel probably was wondering the same thing as he's falling down into this pit. Why me, Lord? And what's going to happen? Am I going to be gobbled up by these hungry beasts or not? So, things to think about. The provisions of the Lord for people can be miraculous. Not always are, but they certainly can be. Verses 20 through 22 say, "And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, 'Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?'" Notice how many times he said, "whom you serve continually." He's indicating there's a consistency about Daniel that goes above and beyond what most people might be associated with. "Then Daniel said to the king, 'O king, live forever.'" That's the typical appropriate response to when addressing a king. "My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." Whoa. Did he set the record straight? Interesting to think about what his intention was there. Sometimes the Lord intervenes for personal safety. As we were kind of pointing out, sometimes he doesn't. But sometimes he does. The king was hopeful but concerned about Daniel's survival. Apparently one night in the lion's den was a minimum that was necessary to fulfill the requirements. It didn't say you have to stay in the lion's den until you're dead. It simply was you were going to be thrown in the lion's den. And if you manage to survive overnight, then you're free to go. What are the odds that you're going to pull that off, however? So early the next morning, Darius set out to release Daniel, assuming, hoping that he would have survived. Since he was uncertain about the fate of Daniel, the king called out to him, whom he probably couldn't see at this point, hoping that he might still be alive. Daniel had apparently told Darius previously that he worshipped the living God, or maybe Darius just figured it out that if this God is able to bring about the deliverance of Daniel, he might be a real God, in which case he is a living God as opposed to the non-living gods that all the others around the area would have held to be their gods. Now Darius is wanting to know if this God had been able to save his servant from the lions. And again, Darius more than once acknowledged Daniel's ongoing faithfulness. And he acknowledged the potential of God to be able to preserve and deliver him. And it's somewhat of an indication of the power of a positive testimony. This was all based on Daniel, his testimony, his word, his faithfulness, his consistency. It's a good reminder of the value of faithfulness. It's a great example for us, good model for us to follow. Daniel was confident but courteous about his preservation. But he also said it like it is. Daniel's response was unstressed and direct. I would think spending a night in a lion's den, I would be not quite so much unstressed. I would be wondering, when are they going to get hungry? I mean, they weren't hungry when I fell in here, but when are they going to get hungry? Do they get hungry about 3 o'clock in the morning? I mean, I know our cat likes to go out in the middle of the night and hunt. They get hungry at any number of different times. And he seemed to sermonize a bit here from his rather precarious position in the midst of these hungry lions as he's talking to Darius and kind of telling him what the situation is. So he greets the king courteously, and he explains that God had sent his angels, shut the lion's mouth, and that this was in fact a divine preservation. Hebrews 11:33 references this as well. References lion's mouths shut. This may have been the same angel, or maybe the angel of the Lord that had been in the fiery furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Daniel indicated that God in his mercy had responded and preserved him because he was blameless before God and before Darius. I mean, the only infraction was that he violated this particular edict or decree that was improper all the way around. And he had no intention of harm or disrespect for the king through all of it. So God rewarded Daniel's trust. And Daniel demonstrated his continued faithfulness to the Lord throughout all of this. So it indicates something of Daniel's respect for God, for the king. But it also indicates something of his priority when facing a conflict between them. God is always going to be first because he is the ultimate authority. And as I've pointed out before, it's impossible for totalitarian regimes to tolerate any allegiance higher than them. Can you think of any? Like China? North Korea? Oh, but wait. We are finding in our own nation more and more a mindset that is comparable to that, that there is no tolerance of anyone that holds to a higher power, a higher authority than their own nation. And that is why we are seeing religious liberty being marginalized more and more and more. It's being redefined as simply personal, not corporate, not anything to do with the public contact. It's just a personal thing. And that's what we're seeing happening. It's a similar kind of thing, similar mindset. Because allegiance to God is no longer appreciated and it's barely tolerated. And in some cases, it's not. So the preservation of religious freedom is definitely at risk. There is little toleration of allegiance to a higher power in an age of toleration and inclusivism. wait, I thought this was the age of toleration. Except for we can't tolerate those that hold to a higher power because that is a conflict. It's a threat. But you probably already knew all that. Daniel 6, 23 to 24. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him because he believed in his God. That's pretty clear. And then this interesting turn of events. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. That sounds awful. Sometimes the Lord judges with personal tragedy. The preservation of Daniel was cause for joy and release. Darius had Daniel extracted from the den, and he undoubtedly marveled that he had no injuries whatsoever. Kind of similar to the experience of the three friends. They didn't even smell of smoke. Daniel didn't have any bite marks on him from the kitty cats. There was also a recognition of a correlation between his divine preservation and his belief in God. Because he was rightly related to God, God took care of him in a particular way. One commentator indicated, Daniel's faithfulness got him into trouble, verse 10. His faith got him out of it. Pointing out Hebrews 11:33 as well. The implication is that God takes care of his own. But the way he does so varies greatly. The norm seems to be that God preserves his people through their trials. But he sometimes brings them home to himself. He may spare someone from some great catastrophe by calling them home, because we don't know what they might have faced had they continued on. I remember, I think it was right around the time that I graduated from seminary, that I heard about someone had graduated from seminary. I don't remember if it was the same time or place, but it was not too far from that time frame because I was thinking about it, who on his way after having graduated from seminary was killed in a car accident. And you think, now, why? I mean, he went to all this trouble to prepare, and then the Lord calls him home. Why does that happen? We don't know. We can assume that God has good reason for it. Maybe it was to protect them from something else. We don't know. We just have to trust that God knows best. But sometimes he does preserve in miraculous ways. Then we have the destruction of the perpetrators was intended as justice. That's what the king's intention was. He applied what has been referred to as the law of retaliation, or lex talionis. He had the accusers of Daniel and their families cast into the very den that they had put Daniel in. And before they reached the bottom, they were harmed to the point of death if they were overpowered and crushed to the point that the text says. Now, this would certainly be consistent with the curse on those who curse his people, Genesis 12:3, as Nathan also referred to in his prayer. It's comparable to the effect of Haman's attack on Mordecai and the Jews in Esther, where he ended up being hung on his own gallows, and those that wanted, that threw the men into the fiery furnace were harmed in the process as well. Different emphasis on that one. But it is consistent with the New Testament principle of reaping what you sow, Galatians 6:7. When we look at this, it looks like part of the retaliation seems a bit arbitrary and unjust. The destruction of the family members seems unreasonable. But then the pagan despots of that time had no regard for the provision of the Mosaic Law, because the Mosaic Law, Deuteronomy 24:16, says, "Fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor children put to death for their fathers. Each is to die for his own sin." But we know that there were various occasions where this rule was violated by Abimelech, who had nearly all of his father's sons massacred, or Queen Athaliah exterminated the Davidic royal line all except for one, and Jehu had all of Ahab's sons killed. It does indicate the principle that the effects of people's sins touch others beside themselves. That is certainly true. The execution of the evildoer's family seems a bit unfair and cruel, but it does reflect the principle of the time, which would have been corporate solidarity, those associated with him would suffer the same fate. And it was probably to be something that would say to other people, don't you mess up, because it's not going to affect you only, it'll affect others as well. And that's probably what the intention was there. And we know that there were times in Scripture where the Lord called for the destruction of certain groups of people, but it was because they were also thoroughly corrupt as to warrant such extensive judgment. But we don't have the authority to do that. Only God does. We need to allow him to make such judgments according to his own word. Then the lessons learned from difficulties can be illuminating. Looking at verses 25 through 28 or through 27, "Then King Darius wrote, 'To all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions.'" Now, that's kind of interesting. Some lessons may require personal experience to be effective. This experience obviously made a big impression on Darius. This was a rather bold and provocative pronouncement that he made. He is endorsing a foreign god to them, and he's saying everybody needs to acquiesce before this god, to be in fear of him. And it was a decree to all people under his dominion. And it was, if you think about it, sort of a form of thought policing, telling what you need to think. Can you do that? Well, it's not very easy to enforce. Probably not the wisest pronouncement to make. I mean, he meant well. He was certainly recognizing that this God of Daniel is one that ought to be so responded to. But we know that some kinds of decrees don't work very well, and this is probably one of those. This story ends, as did previous ones in the book, and that is the king ends up praising and promoting Yahweh, and this one was even more clear and prominent than the previous under Nebuchadnezzar. But in this case, Darius not only gave praise to God, but he ordered his subjects to do the same, something that he probably went a little carried away on. And so all of this is to indicate that God was bigger than Darius, the mighty king of the time, and so he needed to be recognized. Then the last thing to note here, verse 28. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Now, what do we recognize here? Well, both of those names are being used there. We need to think about that. Does this contradict what had been suggested previously, that Darius may be the same person as Cyrus? So think about that and contemplate the conjunctive there, the word and. Is that the only potential translation there? Some lessons are understood by looking back in history. And sometimes that still doesn't answer everything to our preference. Daniel understood that faithfulness may bring success. Doesn't mean that it may not come with troubles. Faithfulness is something to be sought, and the benefits of that can be great, but just being faithful doesn't mean everything's going to go well. It may be just the opposite, as was the case with Daniel, as was the case with the Apostle Paul, and go down the list, many others, even Christ himself. But he did ultimately reap the benefits of being faithful, and we can learn from that example. And then some elements of history are not easily understood due to various limitations. There are human limitations in our understanding. We don't know everything. We don't understand everything, or some factual limitations. There may be information that's lacking. We should note that this verse does not necessarily negate the possibility that Darius and Cyrus might have been the same person. We don't know that for sure, but it's possible to translate this as the and as even, that is, in the reign of Darius, even in the reign of Cyrus, indicating that it may have been the same person. So that is a possibility. It could be an explanatory note on that. And I'm not going to take the time to expand on that further at the present. This historical narrative may provide a foreshadowing of future events. There may be some illustrative information here, the idea of God's people going through difficulty, but ultimately God is going to provide for them. And Dr. John Walvoord, in his commentary on this, indicates that he suggests that it may illustrate deliverance of the people of Israel from their persecutors in the time of the Great Tribulation. And it, certainly you can see that that is a possibility, that is there. So, like Daniel, the expectation is that the people of God in persecution are to remain faithful regardless of the cost. And Daniel faced a very difficult time. We may face many difficult times. We know that life is not always easy. As a matter of fact, it's more frequently not easy than it is. We've probably had it easier than most in the world throughout history in many ways. But we can anticipate that there may be more intense times of persecution, opposition, resistance. And the question is, can we hold up under pressure? Can we stand true in the midst of all of that? There are many laws and leaders that are intent on squelching the law of God and of putting it as far removed from people's thinking as possible. Are we in any way afraid that God is not going to be able to pull through, that he will not prevail? Well, I think we should know that he will. Do we have any fear as to whether we will prevail when we are under those kinds of circumstances? Well, that's a good question. It's a matter of where does our trust lie? Is it in some human political means that's going to preserve us? Or is there something that God may be able to do in, through, or around us? So I just want to conclude with pointing out four brief texts to give us some encouragement. 2 Timothy 1:7, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." That's good to keep in mind. Philippians 1:6 says, "Being confident of this very thing, he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ." He's not going to give up. Hebrews 13:5, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.'" That ought to be some encouragement. And then just a brief condensation of the Great Commission, Matthew 28:18-20. Jesus spoke to them saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." And then he continues and gives the Great Commission. But then at the end of it, he says, "And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." And then it's amen. So let it be. So can we press on even when the pressure is on us? Will God provide? He certainly can. We don't know exactly how he may do so, but we can trust that he will. He will not leave us or forsake us. He has not given us a spirit of fear. He will bring to conclusion what he has started in us. We can be encouraged in that.